There's more to leading people than simply knowing more than everyone else. We have to learn to connect. What's the art of being a great connector and becoming a more effective leader? We're going to discuss that and much more with great insights today on the Five Gifts Podcast. You're listening to the Five Gifts Podcast, a weekly show designed to equip leaders in the Spirit-filled church. I'm Bruce Ritter, and along with my co-host, Charles Russell, we offer insights for leading the local church in the fullest expression of Jesus. If you're interested in learning more about practical theology, the gifts of the Spirit, and spiritual disciplines, this is the show for you. Welcome to the Five Gifts Podcast.
Welcome back to the Five Gifts Podcast. We're thrilled that you've joined us today. What a great day, beautiful day, gorgeous weather. Our family enjoyed some tremendous family time out on the Crystal Coast of North Carolina, had a great Sunday of ministry, and just thankful for the time that we had this weekend. Thankful to be here today on the podcast and looking forward to our conversation and our dialogue about becoming better communicators as we grow in our strengths and skills of connecting and being connectors. Bruce, how are you doing today?
Doing well, coming off a good weekend. Had a chance to work with some pastors over the weekend and kind of sharpen actually some counseling skills. So I was excited to be part of that.
Okay.
But definitely looking forward today, looking at how important it is to communicate and learn to connect with people to become a better communicator and leader. You know, one thing that I've begun to realize is that as a leader, you can have the title, but if no one's following you, then the chances are you're not a leader. And one of the keys to help people move onto God's agenda is the ability to connect and communicate with them. Charles, is connecting, is that a natural ability or is that a skill we can develop?
Well, I definitely believe that connecting is a skill that has to be developed. All great communicators are skilled connectors. Now, here's what I know about great communicators. All great communicators were born, but they weren't born as great communicators. That had to be developed. Those are skills that had to be learned, that had to be honed and crafted and cultivated. Polished and shined up and sanded down and refined, all those words that talk about process. But through the process, we began to see the gifts of communication. We began to see them emerging in great communicators. And I'm telling you, I'm convinced that one common thread and a common characteristic that all great communicators have is the ability to connect. They are more than communicators, they are connectors. And the skill of connecting allows us to transcend obstacles and roadblocks, if you will, in communication. If we can develop and if we can continue to grow, I think that's a key word, continuing in our growth and development as connectors, then we're able to overcome a lot of challenges in communication. We're able to overcome a lot of hurdles and roadblocks that might impede our progress or our effectiveness. So developing the skills of connecting are critical to us growing as communicators. And the good news, the good thing about that is it's possible to do that. It takes some elbow grease. It takes some work. It takes a lot of time and effort. I've been in full-time vocational ministry for about 27, going on 28 years. And I remember some of the first early initial sermons. And it just makes me cringe to think about what those sounded like and looked like. But through a lot of hard work, a lot of growing and cultivating skills, I'm a much better communicator today than when I started. And I think I'm a much better connector. Doesn't mean I'm good at it, but I'm much better personally than I was. But it's a skill that can be developed, and it's a skill that requires development for us as communicators to grow and to be effective, especially in our present day and age of the culture in which we live. So absolutely, we can and we must develop the skill of connecting. So Bruce, as we're talking about developing the skill of connecting again, we've talked about this in previous episode, the ability to connect in regards to our ability to communicate. So as we think about communicating, we think about developing the skill of connection. Obviously, there's kind of a dichotomy here of poor communicators versus effective communicators. Let's talk about poor communicators for just a moment. What are some characteristics, or what are some things that you've seen in regards to poor communication?
Yeah, Charles, I think when you consider what a good communicator is, it's easy to contrast that with what doesn't work. And so when I think about a poor communicator, I think of someone that speaks in a monotone voice, which may indicate, you know, that they're not so much engaged in the material themselves or their presentation or whatever topic they're talking about. Or even if it's an initiative, if it comes off in a monotone voice, to me, that's an indicator that either they're confused about what they're talking about, or they just, you know, don't have a lot of passion about it. So I think that's one indication. And so as a communicator, you got to work on your cadence. You need to work on your presentation, your excitability when it comes to expressing passion. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe another thing linked with that is when you can tell that the presenter or the pastor or the team leader is really devoid of passion and conviction. I mean, I think it's important to express passion, to express your excitement about a new initiative. And when that doesn't get communicated, I think you're looking at a crowd that's going to be disinterested in what they're hearing about.
Absolutely, man. I'm as you're talking about that, I'm thinking about a time that I was doing some education, and I looked over the course schedule, and I saw a particular class that was coming up, and I was so excited about the a guest professor that we were having in that class, because I'd read so many of their books and had been impacted by their writing, and just phenomenal writer and the information they were able to disseminate through their books. So I was fired up about that class and had high expectations. And we get to that particular class, and I'm so excited, and it comes to the day of this guest lecturer, this guest professor in this class. And man, I'm telling you, all the things that you've just talked about poor communication, speaking in a monotone voice, being devoid of passion and conviction, all of these things that came through the dynamics and the voice of the writer in their books, and the passion and the conviction with which they wrote and authored the material that was present in their writing. Man, it was not there in the classroom. This particular person that basically just sat in the chair and it seemed like just read off the computer screen the notes for the class. And I was so disappointed because their books had just given so much life to me that I thought surely the communication style, the verbal communication style, is going to do the same. Man, there was a disconnect, and I was really disappointed walking out of that. So man, it's critical when we have the opportunity to communicate and to be connectors. Again, we're going to talk about one-on-one and small group and large group in a little bit, but whatever the venue or the setting, the context of the communication, don't just speak in a monotone voice, and let your passion and your conviction shine through. It's okay. People gravitate toward that. That's attractive. to the audience, whatever, however great or small the audience may be. So I didn't mean to hijack your teaching, but that those first two points just resonated with me in that classroom setting. So I certainly get it. I can empathize with those who have experienced the same thing.
Yeah, I can definitely. I can think of different situations where I was so excited to hear the person that was on the marquee or in the program or in the syllabus, and to think, man, it was such a disappointment because they had the name recognition and mm-hmm. have written the book and but as presenters they missed a few steps. yeah. You know, another thing that comes up is when a speaker takes the whole time of their allotment, you know, to share or present, mm-hmm. and they speak the whole time and don't really say anything. It's almost like a 45, 50 minute word salad where, you know, they're talking around concepts but there's no thread. There's no, mm-hmm. there doesn't seem to be much purpose in it. One thing that helps me, and it's something I started doing about 10, 11 years ago, was doing one point preaching, because mm-hmm. you keep coming back to the one point, and it helped me be clear. It helped me be more focused in my communication. It helped me tie everything around that one point and get more creative. And so I have had, you know, opportunity to hear people that apparently had more than one point to say, but the thing is that they never made a point. They just seemed to speak around a topic without really saying much of anything.
Yeah.
And I need to share this self-deprecatingly, you know, I've been there. I know what it's like to fill time and really not make a point. I think too, there's a tendency for some people communicating, and maybe it's from a sense of their own sense of expertise, but when they speak down to the audience,
mm-hmm.
that's discouraging. That makes me feel like maybe I'm not listening to a real servant leader. I'm listening to someone who's a little more important in their own eyes. And that's a turnoff for me personally.
Yeah.
And then sometimes with that, they come across as, you know, listen, I know this stuff here. You don't know this. So, you know, sit back and listen. I don't know. I think there's enough in human nature at times where if you communicate that in your demeanor or you know, that first impression you make with your audience, you may lose them for the rest of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then another thing, I've seen this in ministry, in churches. I try not to do it, but I've definitely heard and experienced it come across when the presenter has an angry demeanor,
yeah,
or when they express a negative attitude. Man, that's a huge turnoff to me. I think it is for a lot of people, but that mm-hmm. sense that it's almost a grind for the person to have to be in front of people and sharing. And, you know, it's almost like, I came for something life-giving. Even, you know, even if a message is has a lot of convicting elements to it, I want to hear that there's a God who wants to redeem me and not crush me. So so that angry demeanor. In fact, I remember early on in my years of ministry, there was a minister who's preaching in the pulpit. I remember he was passionate. He just seemed angry. He seemed like just with the sword of the Lord ready to run us through with it. And I remember he stopped in the middle of it and he said, "I know some of you are wondering why I'm so angry." And I thought, well, you certainly read the room right, because I could tell a lot of people around me were like, man, what did this guy, you know, what happened to his morning?
Mm-hmm.
So those are just some things. I think those, when you don't, as a communicator, when you don't, you know, moderate your own emotion, I think that becomes one of those, those moments you wish, you know, you could have back, because you've lost your audience when you do that. Charles, those are some negative things, and maybe a little humorous too. But when you think of effective communicators, what separates them from poor communicators?
One differentiating factor, I think, is the ability to get the audience laughing. Humor is such such a powerful element in communication. So if you can get the audience to laugh, but then also to think by asking questions, you have a powerful dynamic in your communication, and a powerful dynamic in connecting. People love to laugh, and if you can make them laugh, that connects them to you as the speaker, connects them to the subject matter that you're presenting on. And so I think developing those skills of humor and communicating humor. Now, you know, we're not there to do a comedy routine. But I think the ability to weave laughter and to weave humor throughout the message is a powerful, powerful dynamic that connects people to the message and to the messenger, and that elevates our connection in our communication. But you've got to be careful too, because I've seen it happen, and it's happened to me when, you know, you thought something was funny, and man, you let it out and you shared it, and you just bombed. Everybody just sits there looking at you like, what was that? And what did you just say? You want to, you know, crawl behind a rock or something, but you know, sometimes you just have to take a chance, and sometimes it lands, sometimes it doesn't. But again, the idea is not to be a comedian or do a comedy routine. But there are natural moments when you can interject humor in the message, and it's a powerful device for connecting. I think a second point that would that we see in effective communicators is you might hear somebody say, "Wow, they were electric," or that the room was electric when they took the stage, or when they left the stage, you could feel the energy in the room. And what people are saying is that the audience could feel what the speaker felt. You know, when the speaker takes the stage, or even in a one-on-one conversation, you know, when you engage in that conversation, you're able to lift the energy. You're able to shift the mood and the atmosphere of the room or the venue of the conversation, and people walk away being changed and feeling different because the speaker was able to convey to the audience, again, however great or small that is, they were feeling. When we step into the pulpit as preachers, there's a, you know, some of the old timers used to talk about the burden that they felt, and there's the urgency of preaching. And so when we walk into the moment to deliver the sermon, there's that urgency or that burden for the word that we're going to deliver. And so I think in the context of preaching and communication, being able to communicate and being able to convey that same urgency, that same burden to the audience, that's a powerful and dynamic means by which we can connect. Another way that we can be effective in our communication is you might hear it, or a statement made about a communicator said of them, "Wow, they really moved the audience." And what they're saying is that the speaker created the kind of feeling that makes you want to stand and cheer at the end. And so that's a great room to be in, or that's a great conversation to be in or that's a great small group setting to be in when the speaker or the presenter is able to create that kind of feeling, that excitement in you, that where you've connected to it, where when they finish the story, you're clapping your hands or you're cheering with them. them, or you're, I mean, you're there in the moment, and it just makes you want to stand up and express your connection, you know, with the content or with the presenter. So being able to develop those kinds of skills, and man, I tell you, storytelling is a powerful, powerful way to be a connector. And if you really want the audience to connect, being able to tell a story is a powerful way to do that. And again, that's a skill that can be developed. And I would encourage anyone who wants to be a better communicator, certainly a better connector, learn how to tell a story and practice telling stories, and the better you get, the more you'll see the connection and people standing and cheering at the end. Another effective tenet, I guess, of effective communicators is they use illustrations, and so that would kind of look like, you know, providing a logical statement and then backing it up with a powerful story. We just talked about telling stories. And so using illustrations are a wonderful way to connect, you know, the audience. Again, another one, possessing a great sense of confidence. When you walk out on the stage, or when you walk into the conversation or into the meeting or whatever the setting is, go in with confidence. And confidence is a byproduct of preparation. So when you're prepared, you can walk into the moment with confidence. And when effective communicators that possess confidence do a great service to the audience, because the audience feels like there's a natural connection to the speaker who has confidence. So all the things that breed confidence, preparation, doing the work, time spent in preparing oneself, do all of those things so that there's confidence, and that then the audience feels like, wow, there's a natural connection here. I can trust this person. Another way of effective communication is that these kind of communicators make everything they talk about sound new, so that you're actually learning something. Have you ever experienced that? You know, you go to a conference, or go to a church service, or again, in a small group, you go into the setting, and whoever's presenting that day, it's a similar or a familiar subject that you've heard, you know, multiple times before, but they present it in a way that it sounds brand new. And what that means is, to that person who's sensing that, is that they're learning something from you. They're learning something from your communication. I used to struggle with this. People would come up to me and they'd say, "Oh, Pastor Charles," said, "I just learned so much today. I've never heard this passage preached that way before." And so I would tell my wife on the way home after church, I said, I need to go back and check my exegesis and make sure that I'm preaching the true counsel of the Word of God here, that I'm not preaching something that's not in the Word. But what I've discovered is that I was able to make a connection with that person, and they were able to learn something new. So that's a good thing. And then the last thing I think we could kind of mention here is that effective communicators, effective connectors, they just have a way of putting everyone at ease. Helps them have a great sense of security. Again, confidence plays a part in that, but they help the audience feel confident, and they help the audience have a sense and a feeling of hope. And so, you know, you can go back and kind of look through these lists of poor communicators, effective communicators, and where is it that in the poor communication list that you could give some attention to that could lift your effectiveness as a communicator? Then maybe think through the effective communicator list we talked about, and what are some things that are working now that you could even strengthen in your communication? So we're going to listen. If there's going to be communication, there has to be a communicator, and there has to be someone who's listening. And we're going to listen to poor communication, or we're going to listen to effective communication. So, Bruce, I'm interested today. What is it that makes people listen? What causes us to want to listen to someone who's communicating?
Well, I think you've touched on several things that are part of connecting, that people want to listen when they feel connected. And I don't think it's just to the material or to the message as much as they feel connected to the communicator. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I think about in, you know, because our ministry is pretty consistent in communicating to large groups of people just through preaching, and that you're wanting people to connect with a truth from an ancient text. And so that has to be compelling, and you want to present that in a way that seems fresh and new and relevant. And I don't think it's that hard actually to preach the Word of God, especially when you study it and look at just how it is divinely placed together. But I think one of the things that is helpful in making people want to listen is, how is that relevant? How is that? What are the applications? And so when you get into application of the scripture, you get into so many areas where people are actually living, and you have so much material there to work with. And I think when you do that in a compelling way, you do bring people into a space where they're teachable, and they're kind of hanging on their seats of wanting to know, what does this mean for me? How do I begin to live into this this message? But as a communicator, again, you have to be intentional about it. You have to learn to connect with others, not just in the skill of getting ready to present, but in the way that you relate to those that you want to lead. And so I know when I observe a great leader who is a great communicator, I know that they've done those outside of the platform things necessary to help bring people close to them. And obviously I think one thing that makes people listen is that sense of relationship, that they know who you are, mm-hmm. that when they know you, they're factoring in your credibility. You've established that with them. You've established yourself in them as someone that's interested in them. They know you because you've made an attempt to know them. And I just think that's foundational, and especially when we've talked about the kind of leaders that Jesus raises up in the church. God has raised up people after his image. And you know, as we look through scripture, God is not just the one who's made himself known, but he came to know us, that Jesus was a man like we are in humanity, in our experience, fully tempted, fully tried, fully submitted to the elements of what it means to be human. And so, you know, a leader that's made the effort to know the people he's trying to lead, again, I think that's one clear indicator that because you've made an attempt to know the people you lead, that they know you. So relationship is huge. I think secondly, when people see how you live and they see that the sacrifices that you make as a leader, you know, we talk about the leadership triangle and how the higher you go as a leader, the more restricted your life is, because you're bound to things beyond you. You're focused on a lifestyle that is empowering, that is leading other people. And when people see, I know as a pastor, you know, there's so many sacrifices, spoken and unspoken, that we have to make when it comes to family time. And I'm not saying that it's good that you make a habit of sacrificing family time for the sake of ministry. But, you know, sometimes that just comes with the territory. And so as much as you want to cultivate a great relationship in your family, there are those times where I've had to go to the hospital at 2 o'clock in the morning. I had to miss a weekend with my wife and daughter one time because of a death in the church. Mm-hmm. And I think when people see that you're the kind of leader that's willing to make those sacrifices on their behalf, when you're able to not only walk through tragedy with them, but when they see you walking out your own life disappointments, I can think of the times where, I had a relative commit suicide early on in, mm-hmm. in my tenure at my current church. And, my church came close to me. Well, they got to observe how I was handling that, yeah. how my family was handling that. And, I think a vulnerability during that time, it helped me as a communicator because my church knew that I feel emotions like they do. So sacrifice, how you live, I think that speaks volumes to them. Charles, when you think of speakers that do that, I might have just shared maybe one of my own stories, but when you think of a speaker who has been vulnerable about tragedies in their own life, is there anyone that comes to mind for you particularly?
Yeah, it is. And I can't, man, for the life of me, I can't remember their name, but I remember I was a junior or senior in high school. So that, just a couple, 2 or 3 years ago, probably. I was a junior and senior in high school and was at a church service. And we lived in Charlotte, North Carolina at the time. And it was a service on the other side of town. So we were there and they brought in these guest speakers and they just began to share about a tragedy in a church they were pastoring. Their members of their youth ministry had gone on a trip and there was a tragic bus accident. I think it was like a charter bus or something. And it just devastated the church. And just in a moment, multiple loss of life of teenagers, and so families were devastated. The church was devastated, and they just began to share this tragedy. They were very open, very transparent, very very honest about it, with how they felt. Just really kind of cliche, but just really shared from their heart, And I was deeply impacted by that. And they began to share about the family dynamic and how families began to change their communication as a result of that, how it began to shape kind of a new burgeoning church, how this crisis and tragedy affected and shaped their church from moving forward. And I was touched to my core. And now I have a great family and was raised in a great home, had a great relationship with my family, still have a great relationship with my family. But that those pastors, their ability to share their tragedy and share their be vulnerable in that moment touched me in a way that it changed the way that I related with my family, the way I communicated with my family. To this day, I'm still impacted by that sermon, by that moment. These years later now. So those pastors, they connected with me in their communication by being vulnerable, and it has had a lasting impact that still affects me today in the way that I communicate and relate with my family members.
Wow. So that's clearly an example that when you get to experience the leader, the communicator who expresses vulnerability, you see there's the human connection that happens there. And I think it brings down some barriers for us. It brings down our walls. It brings down the things that might inhibit us from listening just because we mm-hmm. see that brokenness in them. If I could think of a couple other things that have to do with you know, what makes people listen to us. I think clearly insight, that you need to know what you're talking about. yeah. I mentioned earlier that, you know, the person that comes across as I'm better than you, I know more than you, I'm the expert, you don't know anything.
Mm-hmm.
That's a put off, but that doesn't diminish the fact that as a leader, a communicator, you need to know what you know, and you need to know how to communicate. In fact, yeah. You know, one of the things I always heard about your knowledge of the scriptures is your ability to teach the scriptures in a way mm-hmm. that's compelling. And I think that's true, that if you can take your resources of knowledge and understanding and communicate that, then people want to listen to you, and they want to listen to you, especially when they realize that you're empowering them and speaking into their lives in a productive way. I would also say success, you know, your own sense of, it speaks a lot to your credibility, the things that you've done, the things that you've accomplished. And now I think there's a trap there, because we don't want to get into comparisons between what we've accomplished based on what other people have accomplished. But I think in a healthy way, when you can recognize that you have done some things in life, you've reached some goals, you've achieved mm-hmm. some things, that it does give you some credibility in front of people. And you can talk about those in a way that is not arrogant, because arrogant is off-putting.
Yeah.
You can definitely build your credibility with people, but just by talking about honestly about the things that you're passionate about, that you've achieved in life. And close to that is your ability. When people recognize what you can do as a leader, when they begin to see your strengths and they see those as connected to their success, then when you consider the abilities that you have, they can become bridges to connect with others. I know I just got off a call with someone and it shared with them my story as a, and my coaching journey, where I was in life and wanting to, you know, take some next steps just as mm-hmm. a coach. And, you know, they were very encouraging about that. And I think that the sense that I got from them was they saw those in me. They saw that ability. They understood that this was, and so it was easy to encourage me, because they saw that I have the ability there. And it was affirming for me. So, you know, your ability, your success, the insights, the thing that you know, the vulnerability of life, just where people get to see the sacrifices that you make. I think bottom line is that relationship factor, that people know you because you've made the attempt to know who they are.
Mm-hmm.
Charles, those are some things that I can come up with. But, you know, as a communicator, when you're called to lead people, you don't just lead people from one realm. I mean, there are multi-layers in which you have to communicate with people. What about connecting one-on-one? What do you see as vital to being a good one-on-one connector?
I think if we're going to be effective connecting one-on-one with people, leading people in one-on-one conversations, a few things that come to mind. Number one is have interest in the person. Actually show and that you're interested in, and you care for them. That goes a long way. So you know, when you have the conversation, when you have the meeting, put your phone down, put your phone away. I don't know if I shared it in the previous episode, but I was having a conversation with somebody one time, and they're the one that initiated the conversation. So I was excited about that. And so we began to talk, and they kept their phone. They kept texting while we were talking or answering phone calls while we're trying to have a conversation. I finally just got fed up with it. And while they were either talking or texting, I just walked away, and I ended the conversation. You know, I didn't say bye. I just, all right, well, I'm out, you know, stick a fork in me, I'm done. And so I ended the conversation and just walked away. You need to, if you're going to lead people, if you're going to connect with people one-on-one, you have to have interest in the person. And just to piggyback on that, place value on the person. Show them that they're valued and that they have value in their eyes. Act and behave in a way. Let your body language speak in a way that shows that you're interested, but also that they have value. Put his or her interests ahead of your own. Again, if you're going to connect, how can you serve them? We're servant leaders. We're called to serve. And yes, we have agendas, and yes, we have vision and mission, and we have dreams and goals and desires and aspirations. We have all these things as leaders, but so do they. They have interests and they have things that are important in their lives. And so if we're going to connect, we've got to lay our agenda down sometimes and allow their interests to come to the top. Talk about what's important in their lives, more so than what's going on in mine. And then finally, just a great way to connect one-on-one, express gratitude to that person and for that person. I think this is something that gets overlooked far too much, is just the idea of expressing gratitude. I think we have gratitude, and I believe we're thankful for people, but I don't believe that we express our gratitude often enough. And so express our thanks and appreciation to people. Tell them how thankful we are for them. It doesn't have to be a special occasion. It doesn't have to be anything out of the ordinary. Just express gratitude to them and gratitude for them. That goes a long way in leading people in developing strong relational connections. So Bruce, we talked about one-on-one. How about in a small group or a group setting? How can we develop those connections?
Yeah, I think there's some parallels between connecting in a group to connecting with the individual. Obviously, showing interest in each person of the group. One of the things that happens is when you're moving from one-to-one to the group is there is a different dynamic, but the same qualities need to be part of that experience. So when you show interest in each person, you think about one-on-one, you want to make sure you express that to the individual, but in the group, you're expressing to the group that person's value. And so it can be very affirming and life-giving. And again, just as you mentioned, placing value on each person by showing their value to others in the group. And it's like vouching, for this person is got the stuff. Yeah. This person's important to the team. Now, I will say that there's something that happens when you're using this as a tactic and it's not genuine. Mm-hmm. That what can happen is if you show inauthenticity, and you're wanting to show value, but if people perceive that's inauthentic, mm-hmm. then not only can an individual pick up on that, but in a group, then that becomes the narrative of the group, behind your back, is that that you're using methods of connection just to be manipulative. And so I just want to say, make it real, make it authentic.
Yeah.
Don't just do it in the group. Connecting with a group means you need to connect outside of the group with people. So I just want to throw that in there, but also make it your goal to add value to every person in the group. Make sure every person on the team knows that they have a role, they have a value, that they are a value add to our, mm-hmm. our projects, to our objectives, to any initiative that group is about. And then I think, again, you mentioned gratitude. I think you need to express gratitude to each person in front of others. For that group to be cohesive and strong, when they see the leader showing genuine gratitude to each member, then that only adds to the cohesion of the team. And sometimes, it can help other people on the team see that the skill, their own skill that they might overvalue in terms of the group, where they're thinking, I'm the one making this group go. Well, when you show gratitude to other members of the group, then it tends to fight that individual thing. And I think that's important as a leader. You know, I think as a leader in the group, you're such a galvanizing force. And sometimes I think leaders underestimate how much they can galvanize the group by just taking a few of these measures that we've talked about. So, you know, Charles, you covered the individual, and I've just maybe shared a few insights about connecting to the group, but why don't you talk to us about connecting with the larger audience?
Sure. I think a key factor in this, and this is something my dad taught me. He modeled for me. This is something that was caught, probably more than taught, from him. But is to meet and greet members of your audience before you speak, you know, if possible. So my dad modeled that for me all my life, growing up in a pastor's home, serving on a staff with him for a period of time. He was never the pastor that was stuck in his office. And I'm not, everybody's got your own styles. I'm just talking about the way, it's kind of the way my dad approached things and things and lessons I learned from him. But he was always out in the foyer, or in the welcome areas, the greeting areas of the church, shaking hands, hugging necks, talking to people, laughing, just building relationship with people. And, you know, and he pastored one particular church for 26 years. And so you can understand the level, the deep level of connection that he formed with that particular congregation just by being there on Sunday mornings. And so you can also imagine how deeply those Sunday morning messages would resonate with the congregation. Yes, because the Word of God is truth and is powerful. And yes, because they were anointed and empowered by the Holy Spirit, but also because of the deep relational connections that my dad would make over the course of 26 years with in the same church. And so and you know, I've always practiced that in our pastoral ministry, but now as we're traveling and speaking in different churches most every weekend, it's still a discipline that I practice. And so as soon as I walk through the doors, even as we're walking toward the door, as people are in the parking lot, I'm shaking hands, I'm talking, I'm laughing, I'm interacting with people, I'm trying to learn names and make introductions and just making connections. And that continues all throughout kind of the pre-service times. It's a powerful way to make connections with your audience, meet and greet people. You know, if it's possible, try to take advantage of that. Another way, prepare your talk or your sermon, your meeting notes, whatever your communication is. Prepare it in such a manner that you prepared it because you value them. So as you're preparing your talk for that occasion, it's not because, well, I have to do this, and so I'll say this, or it's in the forefront of our mind is because of our value or because of their value to us. Begin to prepare your talk from that posture, from that position, because you value them, you value their person, you value their time. So when the team comes into a meeting with us, they're making a sacrifice of time away from family, away from their schedule, and so we want to give them value when they're meeting with us. We don't want it to be, well, this is just another disorganized meeting and no time or thought put into it. No, we want there to be value, and so prepare your talks, prepare your communication from that mindset. Another
Charles,
way,
if I could interject about that, preparing your
absolutely.
Talk because you value them. I think there can be a tendency for people to think that preparation is not that important. because they're so important. And I remember hearing one of the great leaders we've had in our movement, Charles Crabtree. He was assistant superintendent for the Assemblies of God for a number of years. And I've always thought, you know, he's on the Mount Rushmore of our preachers. He's just so good. And I remember him sharing in a preaching seminar that he went to. He was on vacation, he and his wife, and they went to a church. He didn't name the church. But on Sunday, they went to the service, and, you know, unannounced, no one knew that he was planning to come, and this AG church somewhere, that the pastor on the platform was seated on the platform during worship, never got up. About the second song, he pulled out a box, opened the lid, and started thumbing through whatever was in the box. And he pulled out a piece of paper, put it back. Pull out another piece of paper. You know, worship's going on. He pull out another piece of paper, put it back. He finally closed the lid on the box and set it down. And when the song service was over, he got up and announced to the church. He said, "Folks, sometimes you just need to follow the Lord and wing it." And as such a skilled, disciplined pulpiteer as Charles Crabtree was, you can tell. Uh-huh. That didn't fly with him. Yeah. And he said the guy should have pulled out a sermon after what he heard. You know, that idea, I think that is so powerful, that your preparation is not just preparing to deliver a message. It is a reflection of how you value the time of the people that you're presenting to. Mm-hmm. And you want to prepare and do a good job.
Yeah, absolutely. And preparation is a means for the communicator to serve the audience. That's the kind of next one I wanted to say was, you know, we want to put people first by letting them know we're there to serve them. And one of the ways that we can demonstrate to an audience that we've come to serve is that we walk in prepared. Preparation is critical to servanthood. And so we prepare ourselves so that we can take the stage and we can serve those who are in attendance. So maybe that might be a good exercise. If you're listening today, viewing in, take a moment after this episode and maybe write down 3, 4, 5 ways that you can serve an audience through your communication, through your speaking. You know, what are some specific ways? What are some ways that you can serve the audience through speaking? We give you the first one's preparation. Be prepared. But then beyond that, how can you communicate to the audience that you've come to serve them as a speaker? And then last, certainly not least, we want to express gratitude and we want to thank the audience for their time. This would not, if there was no audience, there would be no communication. And so as great and as powerful as the message is, and pastor and leader, we believe that God has gifted you with a great and powerful message. There needs to be an audience to receive that. And so we want to express gratitude and thanks to them for deciding to come out and listen. And to be a part of this communication time by giving up their time to come and be a part of what God is doing and using you to communicate in that venue. So please don't leave that time of communicating without expressing gratitude and thanks to your audience. It goes a long way in making connection with a larger audience. So with that being said, Bruce, I just want to say, hey, thank you to everybody who's tuned in today and who tunes in as part of the Five Gifts podcast. We are deeply grateful and extremely thankful for each and every one of you. And so we appreciate you so much. And our prayer and our desire is that this podcast is a benefit to you, is a tool in your growth and development. And so we greatly appreciate your faithfulness and tuning in with us. So thank you very much.
Absolutely. And I think that's the perfect encapsulation for what we try to do on the Five Gifts podcast, that we do try to come prepared with elements of that help empower leaders, mm-hmm. both in official and unofficial capacities in the local church. And definitely, we do appreciate that you've shown up and spent your time with us. If you'd like to take the next step in your leadership growth, Charles and I are both coaches, and we care about helping you become the best version of you as a leader. And if it's in the area of communication and connection, we can certainly help you there as a coach. If you'd like more information, check out our websites at charlesrusselltraining.com or coachingcardia.com, and you should see those links in the description, and we'll put those on the screen as well. It's so great to have you with us today. Next week, Charles, I believe we're going to get back into some of the gifts, especially related to the pastoral gift. We're going to look at some of the supportive spiritual gifts, and I'm really looking forward to that episode next week. But until then, we hope you have a great week, and that we'll see you next week on the Five Gifts podcast.
God bless.
You've been listening to the Five Gifts podcast. If you would like to take the next step as a spiritual leader, we invite you to visit either of our websites or contact us for leadership coaching. We can help you reach the next level in your own growth and leadership. We provide leadership, spiritual gift, and personality assessments to give you a better grasp of your leadership style. And we also create a customized growth plan that empowers you to reach your full kingdom potential. We can't wait to hear from you.